Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Hi Gina.
Hi Ioni. Hi everyone. I'm Gina, the senior editor of Polyester.
And I'm Ioni, the founding editor-in-chief of Polyester. And this is the Polyester Podcast, a feminist pop culture podcast dissecting the discourse on a weekly basis.
Before we start, if you're a fan of this podcast, please make sure to like, rate and subscribe. And if you really love us, you can sign up for a podcast membership where you can join our WhatsApp and get on our Instagram close friends for only £3 a month. Do we have any reviews, Ioni?
We do. 5 stars, the girls. When they say the girls and the gays, these are the girls. Found this podcast via Instagram Reels and immediately loved the cultural commentary in a way that's both organic and unpretentious, but well thought and researched. Love this podcast, and I love it when you guys disagree, which is very cute. That is by Nina in the US of A.
Yeah, that's like the perfect review.
Very lovely.
I've never had a nice review in my life.
Shut up. Yeah, you have.
I was absolutely sinning though.
How are you, Gina Tonic?
I'm good. How are you, Ioni Gamba?
I'm fine.
I had my first commute this morning.
How was it?
It was good, yeah. I had my the Vondest remix on, I was on the bus, the sun was shining, the grass was green, the tank was clean.
And now, we're about to ruin it all.
Yeah, we're going to antagonise each other a bit.
So, what are we talking about today, G?
Today we're talking about a Substack essay that was kind of slagging off media parties, or the current state of media parties, that you found through people discussing it on Twitter, but then it kind of turns out that the Substack publication, which is called These Links, kind of writes essays for them to go viral on Twitter.
Yeah.
And then the essay itself was talking about, like, journalists being boring, like, the community being cut off and just kind of, like, not enjoying these media parties that were kind of, like, shown to be incredible in, like, the media of their youth.
Basically, I've put, why are journalists obsessed with themselves?
Yeah.
Too long didn't read.
Too long didn't read.
Yeah, why journalists are obsessed with themselves.
If you need a summary, two journalists are going to get into why journalists are obsessed with themselves.
I'm not obsessed with myself. I'll say it now.
I'm a little bit obsessed with myself. A little bit.
No, okay, so wait, I'll do it properly. So, These Links Substack publication posted an anonymous article about how bad media parties are. Everyone on Twitter has lost their mind, so I'll read some out to you.
And
so
this is the New York media scene. Do you think it's applicable to here?
Yeah, well, kind of. I think, well, I wrote in my notes, let me get into it first.
Yeah, go on, sorry.
So, Rebecca Jennings tweet, media party discourse on Twitter, heavy breathing, anxious posturing, people actual media parties. Hey man, how's it going? Someone called Maya Kossoff said, I used to host a media happy hour and now I don't work in media. My life is exponentially better and my friends are not media friends, just friends, some of whom work in media and many of whom do not. It gets better.
It gets better? Yeah. Are you mental? You've not been, like, gay bashed.
Someone called Gabby said, I've long said that there are no cool kids in an industry almost entirely made up of people who at one point in their lives were involved in their high school newspaper or debate club. Kylie Robinson says, New York media scene sounds like hell on earth. I'm sorry, please don't throw stones. Someone else says, there's just so many, like, literally, I was at Gina's new flat and I was just refreshing Twitter for the Year For You page and it's just coming up over and over, like, tens or tens
of
tens.
Yeah, you just kept reading them out and I was going, what the fuck? And then you were going, no, the algorithm is, like, bringing them to me now.
Yeah.
Did your school have a newspaper?
Not my school, my uni did.
Did you have a debate club?
No, we spoke about this last week.
Oh, did we?
Yeah. When someone said they were in a debate club and I said, and then you said you're in the environmental club.
I was in the environmental club. I was, yeah.
I thought we had clubs at my school.
It was more just like for the kids who didn't want to walk home because they'd get absolutely bullied and like battered. So you'd just stay behind after school for an extra half hour and have like a tag on it.
Mm-hmm. So continuing tweets, Angie Gem says, main thing this piece highlights is the very important difference between media friends, which is sad if that's the only friend you got, as opposed to normal friends, some of whom happen to work in the media. Terry Nugan said, so funny to me when people take their job slash identity so seriously. This is pretty much the case for every industry, except media has a higher percentage of publicly annoying people. And that's what it comes down to, isn't it, really? Gina?
Yeah, I agree.
Don't get distracted.
No, I agree with it. I was just pontificating.
So I think when I was looking at all of this as well, it kind of made me think that Twitter is basically just like journalists are friends, especially as so many journalists are freelance. But I don't understand what it is that makes journalists so obsessed with slagging off their profession on Twitter.
Well, people love slagging off the jobs anyway. And they're just doing it on this platform where they're going to get gratification from other media people. And they'll also get this kind of like an elevation to slagging off your job when it's a job that's really highly coveted. Because it shows like you are like so above it all that you can slag it off.
Mm-hmm. I think there's this like subsection of people who work in media that basically make their job their personal brand, but as in they don't make their work their personal brand. It's the fact they're a journalist is their personal brand.
Yeah, a journalist or an editor or a magazine founder.
Yeah, exactly. So there'll be like 20 TikToks a day being like, I'm this and I did this because X, I run this magazine. And
because
it's just like,
this, yeah.
It's never actually the work. It's just them being the like the job.
Yeah. And I understand why people do it a lot of the time. Like people might do it to get more business for the magazine because people will buy into a person as a brand because of the way that social media is. Like, I understand that strategy. And I think I have, to an extent, made my work my brand. But I think because my work is so revolved in identity,
I think that's two different things, though.
You kind of have to.
Like, we never see these people's work. We just...
No, yeah.
They get people interested in them because they are, like, an editor slash journalist slash writer who has something.
Yeah.
Like, ex-identity. It's not like they're not posting their work.
No, I know.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree with her. I think they're like, especially when it's just slagging off as well, you're like, this is just miserable town.
It is miserable, and it's like baiting people into caring about you, but not because you're actually doing anything worthwhile.
Well, it's baiting people into thinking that you're like in this elevated position, that you are so elevated that you can complain.
Yeah.
Which I'm not saying like that even journalism is an elevated position, I don't think it is.
I mean, yeah, we're not doing up like boomer Gen X saying that you can't complain about your job, because I've definitely done like tweets and Instagram stories before and people don't pay me. But I do think it's a bit like tone deaf to complain about certain things in journalism when it is like a middle class profession, essentially. That's arguable, I suppose, in some ways, because like journalism is badly paid, like journalism is this, journalism is that. But in comparison to like most other professions, it's a middle class profession, like,
yeah,
compared to like teachers or teaching assistants or literally anything. And this brings me to my other point, like in terms of parties being bad, you don't expect like an accountancy party to pop off.
Well, exactly, like the work party is only as good as the people who you work with.
Facts.
And then going back to what you said as well, like, it's an aspirational job because it's been depicted to be one, and because there's so many few roles in it, there's so many jobs being lost like daily in this profession. So it does, I'm not saying people aren't allowed to complain, I'm just saying that like if all you're doing is complaining, it just comes across as ungrateful.
Yeah. And okay, let's actually go through the article and see if you agree.
Yeah, sorry, we've just like aired our own back to the source.
So this is the article, it's anonymous so I can't attribute it. The headline is Circus Behaviour and Everybody is Monkey, Monkey, Monkey Clown.
That's like the best sentence I've ever read. I'm sorry.
It begins with, I used to want to be a part of the media party circuit so bad. As a young person aspiring to be a writer, I would zoom into certain Instagram stories of interest, wondering how everyone there got to go. Now, as a person attending them, I'm pissed off. I was lied to, bamboozled, swindled, hoodwinked, like a young maiden in the depths of a dark forest. These things are not fun at all. And it's primarily because you people do not know how to put your boots on the ground and serve cunt.
Lie. Biggest lie I've ever heard. What parties are you going to?
Well, I will say, like, I think misery, like, begets misery. Lots of parties are bad. Like, I don't go to a lot of parties because they are bad and miserable, because people have up themselves.
Yeah, that's the thing. If you go into networking parties expecting to have a good time, that's different. Like, that's a part of your job is networking and going to events that are for networking. Mm. If you're looking for a party, go to a party.
Yeah, it's kind of like a mirror to the media industry in general, because we have really fun parties.
Yeah, I've had the time of my life at all of our parties when I wasn't asleep. And I think we've made networking fun as well at those. Like, we've introduced people to so many other people who they like would get on with or like could work with, and I've definitely like found so many of my connections through going out. Like, I don't mean to slag off networking. I think it is a valuable tool as a journalist, but I think you choose who you want to network with, and those people are should be fun and should be at the right, like, should be at not the right parties, like that sounds so like snobbish, but like the right party to me is with people that are aligned with what I want to do and that I can enjoy talking to.
Well, this is also a really interesting point, because it really kind of sets up the exclusivity of the whole thing, like being like, oh, how do you get to these parties? How do you get an invite? How do you do this? How do you do that? And these parties are like part of a working of, in London at least, like part of the inner workings of like a media industry that seeks to exclude people that aren't like them. So obviously they're going to be bad. And like, why do you kind of aspire to be in these rooms all of your life that don't want you? I think a reason why our events are fun is because they're never like closed.
Yeah, they're never exclusive.
Yeah.
And they're always a laugh.
Yeah.
And I think there's a purpose built into the way that we produce a party, mm-hmm. to be enjoyable. Whereas I think maybe like in the thing she's written, she's like, we need to reinvent the media party. We need to readjust our priorities. Nobody likes having the worth assessed on the currency of the job title. Fair enough. But then it's like, all these people are boring. The food is small bites. Like, and I'm like, right, you're getting a bit like off kilter now. Like, you're slagging off hors d'oeuvres. What's that got to do specifically with media parties?
I also love hors d'oeuvres, I will say.
I love an
They're
hors d'oeuvre.
So fancy.
Also, when we interviewed Gemma, she just went, can you just give me a tray of them? And they went, yeah, fine.
Canapes.
Yeah,
I will say canapé is like canapes forever now, because that's how Gemma Collins said it.
Exactly, and that's what I mean. Like, you can make that like your own fun. Like, she's like, oh, you have to like reach over and grab it off a tray, so you're like not making a tit of yourself in front of all these people that you want to impress. No, like, you've made yourself unfun. And I was also just picturing her at the party, like, she's detailing the people, being like, these men who wear a criminal amount of Carhartt but have never touched a Cheval. These people who went to Harvard and only talk to each other. I'm like, you're the cunt who's just sat in the corner thinking that you're better than everyone while you're on your phone playing on Twitter. You know what I mean? Like, writing notes for your little D's Links article. Like, I'm the one in the corner having a fucking laugh with my mates, and I'm looking over and you're stood there misery arse. Like, I don't think you're contributing to media parties being good.
You are right. But then it got me to thinking, like, why do we... So to round off, someone called Chris Osborne tweeted that Jemima Kirk Instagram story thing, which was like, any advice to people who are self-conscious? And then she says, I think you guys might be thinking about yourself too much, but the person changed it to any advice to New York media people. And I think it's true. We are also thinking about it too much. But I said, overall, this begs the questions to why anyone thought media parties would be good. And I think we've basically been set up. There's so many deep lines of nostalgia that run through journalism and media as a career. Starting with rom-coms in the early noughties.
Starting with, or that's you've started with?
For us, yeah. For our generation.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I feel like I see like that as like a TikTok or a tweet all the time, being like, why was I sold the dream of like Bridget Jones or like Sex and the City, where you'd write like one article and then go on the fucking time of your life.
£6 a word or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think this ties into the fact that Sex and the City is on Netflix for the first time as well, and everyone keeps being like, oh no, Gen Z are going to find out about Carrie Bradshaw. It's like, do you not think they knew anyway? Like, they're on Instagram. Instagram is literally 200 pictures of Carrie Bradshaw every day.
Also, I'm not being funny. On TikTok, you can literally watch an episode of Sex and the City. Like, people are just uploading it in, like, 5 parts.
That's true. Gina's never watched Sex and the City, though.
No, it is. I've watched one, and I think Alanis Morissette was in it, and she was wearing... Carrie was wearing gold boots, and she smoked weed. And I think that's, like, kind of what I vaguely remember. But it was, like, 8 years ago.
I found this article that kind of... Because in my head, it's prolific that lots of rom-com protagonists have media jobs. But I don't know if it is just like, you know, my own bias, because I wanted to be in the media, that I just thought every single person in a film also was in the media.
Yeah.
But it turns out we are right.
No, so, thank you, we're right.
How did journalism become the it career for rom-com protagonists by Emma Spector for British Vogue? she kind of outlines like where this started, and it started with His Girl Friday, which is very apt at the moment.
Yeah, it's on the nose of it. I read that and went, what?
Have we even talked about the beer yet?
No, I don't think we have. Do you want to explain, or shall I?
Well, I don't mind. So we've basically done a charity beer for Eden called His Girl Friday, because His Girl Friday was Eden's favourite film, and obviously she was a hot girl journalist. I haven't actually seen the film.
I haven't seen the film. You should watch the film. I think, like, I've never watched it because I was like, Eden Roth, a fucking black and white film, fuck off. And then obviously she passed, and then I was like, this would be too sad for me to watch it. But Bridget did the design for the can. Yeah. Bridget Main, incredible illustrator and polyester friend, did the design for the can, and she watched the film and she said it is really good. So I will get round to it, I promise. So it started with His Girl Friday.
Yes, and then in 1976 there was Faye Dunaway and Diana Christensen in the 1976 satire Network, and then probably what we remember is like Kate Hudson in How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, Jennifer, what's her name, from 13 Going on 30.
Oh, don't do this to me, because as soon as I'm put on the spot, everything leaves my brain. She used to date
Jennifer
Ben Affleck.
Garland. Is that her name?
No, no. Jennifer Garland.
Garner. also, what's Andy Sachs, Anne Hathaway?
Yes.
In Devil Wears Prada.
Yes.
Even in the Hills, Lauren Conrad goes and does like a Teen Vogue internship, and Whitney, that's how she meets Whitney Port. That's reality telly, obviously. And in Gossip Girl, Blair goes and does a W internship. And
W?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Why?
I don't know. I just wouldn't think that would be mentioned in, like, a TV programme.
W Magazine?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. I'm sorry. My bias is getting ahead of me. I've not watched it, though, have I? I don't know how modern it is. And then you've put in the research as well. Like, you think not only is it the Sex and the City nostalgia, but the girls' nostalgia that's bringing this.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Well, I think it's interesting from like a generational point of view how we kind of have these films that are from like 2003 to 2010 or whatever. I mean, I was, how old was I in 2003? 9. So that would have been like a very first formative experience. That's how old we were, right?
Oh yeah, you were, but do you remember when you were like, I was 15 in 2008. No, actually, you probably weren't. But
I was 15 in 2008.
No, yeah, sorry. I'm so like good at maths that I can't even tell a lie.
Basically how the nostalgia machine works. So at the moment on Twitter, we have like a bunch of journalists in their late 20s to late 30s that were sold a lie about what journalism looks like. They've come up through their career, like throughout layoffs, throughout like recession after recession after recession after pivot to media. And like, it's horrible. There's no denying that. And we'd all just love to have like more expense lunches. Although I will say, I think Gina has a very warped perspective of this after her first 24 hours in London.
Oh, I know. And it's only just about to like ramp up. Like, I've got like, I went for a free dinner yesterday, courtesy of Lauren on our team and Ione on our team, who took us, the polyester girlies, to Keezer and Peckham. It was beautiful.
We were invited by a lovely PR.
Yes. And then we went to, today we're going to
an afternoon tea on a
double-decker bus. And then in the evening we're going to go see Six Sad Girls
at
Lady Dinner. And then Saturday I'm going to a birthday party.
I'm not coming to that.
I'm having a baptism of fire. And then Lauren was like, next week you're just going to be sat in your house being like...
Glamour is what you make of it. It's the moral of the tale here.
I wrote this down in my notes. I went, sorry, but this job is glam. Grow up and go for a blow dry. Like, your job is as glam as you make. Like, and I think maybe like the work from home generation has kind of like killed it off a bit as well. Like, getting ready to get dressed and like go to a job where you're doing the thing that you wanted to do since you were a kid. That's so glam. Yeah. But like, we've gotten so used to just sitting around in our like joggies, or even like coming to work in our joggies now, like no makeup, like Zoom calls, you can put a fucking filter on it.
Yeah.
That people aren't seeing the job as glamorous anymore, especially amidst.
Yeah.
Especially among all the layoffs and everything. Like, it's a very bleak time to go into journalism. I saw that Jason on Twitter, I can't remember his last name, who is on Twitter, saying like, he went freelance in the pandemic and I did the same thing, like that, I quit my job.
You weren't freelance for long though.
I wasn't freelance for long, thank you. But like, went freelance in the pandemic, I wouldn't feel comfortable going freelance now.
Yeah, that's true. And there is like a lot of financial precarity.
Yeah, defo.
In journalism, especially like in terms of job security and stuff. But what I thought was really interesting is that obviously we have this kind of like pre-2007 financial crash, rose-tinted glasses of what we think journalism should be. But then even younger people do not think that. So Hunter Schafer was just on the cover of GQ and she was talking about the girls' renaissance. So this is the quote. She's in the middle of rewatching Girls, a show she adores and refers to as a period piece. An apt point, but a humbling one for a millennial journalist to hear nonetheless. Quote, in the aesthetic sense, I mean, she clarifies. Their outfits feel so heightened, she says, with the tone of someone considering an ancient civilization for the first time. Is that what it was like? She's been getting some of her friends to watch it, and it's been sparking ideas about the narrative projects she'd like to pursue. We've been dreaming about a show about trans girls like that. And I think that was really interesting. Also, I would like to say we were 18 when Girls came out, so we weren't, like, quite old enough to be...
No, I watched it when I was, like, 21, and I was like, haha, me. And then I watched it again when I was, like, 28, and I was like, oh, no, this actually is, like, cut into the bone, like, of who I am, yeah, like, who my friends are.
I think as people on, like, the tail end of millennial, we were we're kind of, like, a weird in-between generation at this point, where we're not, like... full millennial, adulting is hard, and we're not Gen Z, like, wow, I can never remember wearing some, like...
An owl necklace.
Yeah, an owl necklace.
Yeah, I think as well, even, like, the mood of it, like, I was talking to Taya Asik, who we've got an interview with on The Dollhouse on Tuesday, and we were saying, like, we were kind of just, like, in this aspirational generation, like, Obama was in the White House, like, everything just kind of, like, felt really, like... we'd solved everything. Obviously, we hadn't. And, like, that's a very privileged point of view. But it very much felt that way. Like, we felt very, like, we're everything's just going to continue getting greater.
Yeah, but then as soon as we became actual adults, it went, like...
Everything went, like, as soon as there was, like, the Tory and the Lib Dem.
That was literally when we were 15.
As soon as that started affecting me.
Right.
Well, do you know what I mean?
I think it was 2016. It was the 2015 election when just the Conservatives got into power outside of the coalition. And then it was Trump, and then it was Brexit, and then it was like slam, 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 slam. Like, every political experience we've had as adults has been a negative one.
But we had a lot of our teen years when you kind of build these aspirations.
Yeah.
Was such a positive time to do so. Like, and then we all just kind of like got the door shut in our faces. Mm-hmm. Whereas like the generation below us, even a couple of years below us, grew up in the time with the door shut.
Yeah, it's very true. And I think it's interesting that, like, I mean, this isn't a hot take, but that if girls is a nostalgia piece, then it means that, and we know, we've had essays about it on the site, then it means that people are romanticising girls and, like, romanticising all the job precarity. Not, she was rich, so obviously it doesn't really count, but they're romanticising it for different reasons, which is what the Dollhouse said, right? That, like, they're romanticising it from a economic stability point of view via your parents, but they're also romanticising, like, Bushwick not being gentrified, being able to, like, walk down the street and wear, like, silly clothes and, like, have really long brunches and stuff, whereas everything feels bleak, which is probably why journalists are complaining about their jobs.
Yeah, therefore, I think, like, you see a tweet being like, imagine wearing, like, stripy tights, you have to get the bus, you've got your Walkman, not your Walkman, like, your
iPhone 7.
You've got your iPod Touch, like, do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, that's so funny to, like, hear as aspirational, because that was just, like,
what was going to happen.
That didn't feel aspirational at the time, that just felt like the norm.
Yeah. But I will say, I feel like, if you look at girls compared to, I mean, this isn't a hot take, but even compared to Broad City, I feel like Broad City is way more realistic to how jobs are now. Like, they had precarious jobs. Like, they were always, like, flitting about different work things. Like, I feel like that's more realistic.
Yeah, definitely. I've loved Broad City.
Broad City is so good.
I'd love to rewatch it, you know.
And there's been no English things because English people can't write good coming-of-age shows. Me and Gina could, though.
Yeah, we could, actually, if anyone's out there. I would like to commission that. It's funny that we're, like, talking about, like, Gen Z seeing that as aspirational, though, because I've written, like, when did aspiration stop being achievable?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, with our parents, even.
Yeah.
One of my friends, Sharon, says that literally the 90s would have been the best time to become an adult, and I absolutely agree. Like, house prices low, New Labour, like, obviously I know New Labour is shit, but in comparison,
yeah,
you can live wherever you want. Technology's just starting.
Yeah.
Like, literally the golden age. Like, our parents were, what, like, 26 in the 90s, 27?
Yeah.
Imagine.
I know. No, actually, I know. My parents got a 0% mortgage. Can you fucking imagine? I'll never own a house.
We might if there's another financial crash. I guess
the bar for what is aspirational has just been lowered and lowered and lowered. Like, people are like, oh my god, imagine being able to rent in the middle of Bushwick. Whereas, like, in the 90s, it would have been like, oh, imagine being able to have, like, buy a flat in the centre of New York.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, the bar is just getting lowered and lowered of, like, what we can actually look to see as something achievable for ourselves.
And it's interesting because there's that viral tweet that is saying that, like, right now we're at the exact same amount of time that there was between Sex and the City and Girls. And obviously Rachel Sennett, I'm not sure if everyone has seen, has just been commissioned to write, star in, and, like, show run basically a show that sounds like the new Girls version Truth. Of that. Yeah. Like, about a codependent friendship group. And it will be... what?
Imagine having one of those.
And it'll be interesting to see what that's like, because, yeah, everything is so different now, and it... Yeah.
Okay, so how does this all come back to journalism, though?
Well, I think part of these shows' appeal as well is that they're presenting a kind of, like, really glamorous, amazing lifestyle that's, like, not without its harsh realities that girls showed. Like, that's, like, the kind of shade that girls bought into it.
Mm. And they've got writers as protagonists.
But at the end of the day, they're not real.
I also was, like, reading, like... Whenever I see an article that's been, like, or, like, a TikTok that's delving into, like, why so many characters in these TV shows or films were writers, I'm like, because writers wrote them?
One
fucking answer is, like, because if you're writing something, A, you're putting yourself into it, but B, also, it's so much fucking easier to write what you know. And if you know, like, kind of, like, what the industry's like, yeah, you can write, like, a heightened version of it, or, like, what you'd want it to be like. Or, like, if you're writing a com-rom. If you're writing a com-rom, you want it to be silly and, like, elevated and fun. Like, you're not going to put the nitty-gritty about how someone, like, stole your lunch out the fucking fridge every week until, like, you put, like, fart powder in it or something.
No, this
but maybe Reddit, would, that's quite funny.
This Reddit post was...
in our show.
This Reddit post was so good. What the hell is it with rom-coms in the publishing industry? By emotional hermetic in our movies. Obviously, that's, like, self-explanatory. But then Modern Lover, who's, like, a Reddit poster, posted, after World War II, book and magazine publishing was a huge industry, and women started taking on editorial positions and other roles in publishing that had been previously dominated by men. And as a whole, the industry employed more women than men. So the rom-com started putting their protagonists in editorial roles because that was a desirable career women could advance towards, especially as magazines and books held a far more important role in society than they do now with games, social media, streaming. Previously in the early 1900s, many women worked as secretaries and copy editors. So you see in early rom-coms, the female protagonist was often a secretary, any Cary Grant movie, or store clerk, the shop around the corner, because that's what most women of a certain race and income bracket related to.
Yeah.
Sums it up.
Yeah, it just makes sense then. I also thought, like, it's funny that it says that, like, media used to have more of an importance, and that's, like, why it was more aspirational, I suppose.
Yeah.
It's because I was thinking, like, oh, well, media parties probably aren't the same because the spend isn't the same. Like, ad budgets have to get split between social media and, like, so many different forms of, like, things that media hasn't got the same spend to throw, like, extravagant parties anymore.
I mean, this is very, like, oh, when Vice kind of announced its pivot to social media and everyone's like, they're glory days of Vice when there was a Coke budget. It's very that, isn't it?
I know. Where is our Coke budget?
Fuck no. Absolutely not.
We've got a blow dry budget.
Yeah,
that's our aspiration.
We don't even have a blow dry budget.
Our aspiration for the company is
my aspiration is a blow dry budget.
A blow dry budget.
Okay, well, thank you, Gina.
Thank you, Ione.
Thank you to the listeners.
Thank you, Olivia. Yeah.
We'll see you next week.
Bye. Bye.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.